medical community proudly presents the JDE Connection, a Quest on-air podcast production.
This podcast explores and showcases how JDE customers are harnessing specific functionality and capabilities to drive business success.
Hello, JDE Connection listeners. Welcome back. This is Chandra Wabshaw, one of your podcast hosts, and I'm the manager of business applications at Brightview Landscapes. With me this week and every week is my friend and podcast partner, Paul Houtcooper, Vice President of JD Edwards Product Development at Oracle. As you all know, Paul sometimes likes to try and make me laugh at the beginning as I do this part of the recording. So oftentimes he's on the other side making faces, doing whatever over there, trying to get me to laugh. So if you do hear giggles in the middle of my intro, you know why.
Guilty as charged. I mean, anytime they can hear the smile in your face and that you're trying to hold it together, I'm winning. Hashtag winning.
So excellent.
I can't wait till we get video put on this whole thing.
Oh gosh. First,
you know.
Then I have to do my hair.
I was gonna say somebody's gotta do their hair, but
I know, right? Which one of us is that though?
Shots fired.
Thanks,
that's fair. So
how's it going?
Well, last week we talked about the fact that I was on the struggle bus. I thought I did, and then I got an email this morning from one of our customers asking me to check something out, and being the really bad vice president, executive, whatever, non-strategic person that I am, I decided to dig in. And that's, my team hates it when I do this, mind you, because it's just better if I delegate these things. And I proved that again today as I took a look at it. And, you know, it's never fun to start your day off with just getting frustrated. If I had it my way, I would strike this from our phraseology. It's another three-letter acronym that we forgot to put in Lingo Bingo, or I don't know if we forgot it or we intentionally didn't put it in. So you guys give me a hard time about, you know, what's Paul's least favorite type of enhancement, you know, tell me to create a processing option. Well, this is probably every customer's least favorite disposition. Can you guess what it is?
Yes, I bet I can.
Okay.
But I'm going to let you say it in case I'm wrong.
It's a three-letter acronym, and the letters aren't go pound sand, but that's what it stands for. It's called functions as designed.
Oh, yeah. That is my least favorite response.
Yeah, mine too. And, you know, we've used it for years. I mean, I can't even, like, necessarily hold anybody accountable or put their feet to the fire and, like, because it's just been something that's been out there for 20 plus years. You know, ever since I started, I've seen it and I never liked it. And I know my support counterparts never liked it because they never liked to deliver that message to the customer that basically says, yeah, thanks for letting us know, but too bad, so sad. And I'm not saying that every FAD thing that we've dispositioned in the past warrants fixing or anything like that. I'm not, you know, there's no blanket rules here, black, white, whatever. I mean, all I'm saying is there's probably a better way to communicate that shows a little bit more empathy for the customer, acknowledges the validity perhaps of the use case, even if it's an isolated one, even if it's a unique one, you know, whatever, even if it's a complicated one. But I just feel like FAD just shows no attempt at having a heart for the customer is really what it comes down to. And I don't think the development team intends that. We don't intend that. That's not really what we're after. But we just don't recognize what we're really telling customers in those cases. So I went off on a rant this morning with my team, and we're going to come up with, you know, a better way of communicating in these situations that, like I said, if it's within my power, I will strike it from our phraseology. Doesn't mean we're going to fix anything more than we are already fixing. I don't know. But, you know, maybe it will cause us to take a closer look, peel the layers back, be more curious, ask more questions. Maybe we will come up with some better answers. I don't know. But anytime we have to tell a customer no, we need to be able to do it in a way that's a little bit more, I don't know, personable than what we're doing right now.
Well, and I think this is you know, I appreciate what you're saying, first of all, that as we discussed last week, even, you know, where Chris Laping had highlighted that we need to have empathy for those that we support. In your case, it's a customer. In my case, my customer is somebody within the business or a functional role. But what I think then as users or as customers of yours, that's where if I have a use case and I believe my use case is something that other customers also may have, this is where I need to leverage my SIG. Whichever SIG it might fall under, right? To say, hey, I'm running into this issue. Maybe Oracle said it's not something they're going to look at, but I believe there's a lot of people that are running into the same issue or defect or, you know, my use case. And maybe then I need to get them on board with also submitting requests for it so that you are aware of what your customers are doing. Because you can't possibly know how all of your customers are running your software. I'm sorry. I know I have to have empathy for you for that. How can you possibly know? How could you know I was going to do this with your software?
Right.
You can't. You there's just so many ways to slice and dice and use your software, implement it, configure it. And that's the beauty of it, right? That's what makes it awesome, is that it is flexible. But on the other side, it's impossible to know all the scenarios.
Right. I mean, it, you know, that flexibility creates complexity and people solve problems in different ways. They take different approaches. So not everybody follows the same business process, business practice and whatnot. But I think AI, you know, ultimately solves all this, of course. And then
well, of course, unknown. Totally. Yeah, absolutely. I'll just ask Chad about it next time.
That's right. Well, maybe I'll have my team use chat next time when it comes to functions as designed and come up with a more empathetic way to say, we're not going to fix this. I don't know.
Well played, sir. Well played.
All right. Well, that was what was going on with me. How about you? What's happening on your end?
What's happening over here in Florida? Well, it's rainy season, so we're getting our afternoon thunderstorms. So as we record, if I lose power, that is why, because sometimes that happens in the afternoon. The power kind of surges and have little brownouts due to storms. But I hope it passes through quickly, because on Tuesday nights, I do try to join a local running group. Unfortunately, Rita doesn't get to go with on those these days because it's a little too warm, even at 6:30 at night. Sometimes we get the rain and it'll drop the temps by 20 degrees, but then it turns around and it pumps them back up again and adds extra humidity, which is always fabulous. So Tuesday nights are not usually her run time anymore, which is a bummer because she absolutely loves going to run group. Everybody adores her. But it's not safe, even though I have a cooling vest for her and I can put booties on her and I carry water for her and, you know,
Wow.
My dog is treated well. I take good care of her.
Absolutely. Well, and I can imagine in that environment with all those runners, it's an opportunity for her to herd the pack, right?
Oh, 100%. You know, she's a herding dog. We get in, we start running, and the yips start right away. And it's probably, quite honestly, it's probably a quarter mile of me resisting the dog pull. So I'm being pulled by a 40-pound dog down the road as I try to slow her down because she wants, oddly enough, as a herding dog, you'd think she'd want to be at like nipping their heels, but she wants to lead the pack. So yeah, it's very entertaining.
That is odd.
Yeah.
Strange why she wants to be out in front.
Yeah, I haven't figured it out. I'm not going to put enough time into it. But yeah, she yips and she pulls for probably the first quarter mile and then she settles in. It's hard for me because I legit have to engage extra strength to not allow her to run that fast because I sure as heck can't keep up. If she wants to go off, oh, good Lord, because she's got sprint speed. You know, she can run forever too. She's got endurance, but she's got sprint speed that I don't have. This body that's aging doesn't have.
You found your limits. I see.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. My dog found my limits for me. So.
All right. Well, I hope you don't wash away, and I hope the storms end in time so that Run Group is not canceled. And I'm sorry that Miss Rita cannot go with you and has to stay home.
She pouts, legit pouts. Yeah. It's cute, but it's sad. I feel bad.
She guilt trips you.
I know, completely. She knows the buttons to push.
Yeah, good girl.
I know, right?
All right. So what are we doing today? Are we going to wrap up Security Workbench? I think we had a couple sessions on this or episodes on this before conference. So probably finish it out because I think there's a few left. And we have gotten positive feedback on these particular episodes as an introductory course for those not familiar with, you know, JD Edwards Security. So we would be remiss if we didn't finish, right?
Agreed. And again, we'll probably have more in the future because we still have to talk about UDO security. So we're just starting strictly with P00950, the security workbench, and we're just covering the various security types that are out there for that. And we are not including anything related to the UDO user-defined security in this. So
and if people are just jumping in now for the first time, checking us out, and you're curious for the first couple episodes, that would have been episode 60 and episode 63, where we covered the other aspects of Security Workbench. So
yeah, we covered application security, action security, where we covered some of that. I think it was application, action row, and column security was covered in episode 60. And then I think 63. Thank you. We talked about security hierarchy, and then we talked about tab, hyper exit, and exclusive application security. So,
all right. So let's continue down the list, knowing that these all go in order, right?
Not really. No. What kind of order are you talking about?
Hey, whatever order it is, it's functions as designed. That's all I know.
Well played. Well played. Well, let's start with media object security, which is security type G.
G.
So, yeah, G. So this one kind of enables you to secure your users from adding, changing, deleting, or even viewing media objects within any interactive application, a form, or an application version. So you can apply the media object security to ensure that attachments can't be modified or tampered with after they've been added as well. So very handy.
So it cannot be modified or tampered with.
Meaning you can't view, change, add or delete, you know, type of things, type of activities, steps, whatever you want to call that.
I know we recently received a request to audit and track changes within a media object. So if they actually opened it up and made text changes, it's very interesting. So it's one thing to prevent them from changing it altogether, but then for actually tracking the actual contents and what got changed by who, when, it's like having change tracking in your Word documents.
Right.
Kind of looking for something similar, but within our PDF attachments. Random thought.
Yeah, I could see how that could be valuable. I absolutely could see, depending on how you use your media attachments. We don't have much in the form of media object security ourselves, but I could see how you might want some very specific security set up for this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my next is kind of a favorite of mine. We all know this is one of my favorite troubleshooting tools. Yeah, I bet you can guess. Data browser.
Universal table browser. Oh, wait. No, data browser.
Yes, data browser security. This one allows you to grant permission to either users, roles, or even star public, if you're that crazy, to access the data browser application. There are actually two levels of security that you can assign. So the first level grants you access to the data browser so users can go in and perform queries. And then after you grant this access, you can grant an additional level of security that might allow the user to only select a particular table or a business view that you want them to be able to query. So,
I mean, also, data browser is a pretty powerful tool, one that a lot of people rely on, such as yourself. So I can imagine we don't want widespread access for people to be running massive queries behind the scene, because, I mean, it does take up some resources. So I could see where you want to be able to dial this back and control it. I shouldn't even ask the question, but I assume data browser adheres. Of course it adheres to row and column security and all the business unit security and those sorts of things. So even though you have access at this level, that doesn't mean that you have access to data that you shouldn't have.
And this, like you said earlier, this is one on our side, very few people get access to this. There are those are my super power users that might get access to this, again, because it is a very powerful tool. And if somebody goes in and does do a wide open query on a table and, you know, tries to advance to the end, well, you may get a call from your CNC.
There you go.
Staying in the JDE loop is easy with Quest. Sign up for our free JD Edwards newsletter or follow Quest JDE on LinkedIn or Facebook for the latest Oracle updates, new content publication, and news on upcoming webinars and events. For more info, visit questoraclecommunity.org/JD Edwards.
So that was security type B.
Yes.
Someday we'll solve the mystery of how we assign these out.
That'll be a future episode for us.
We've gone 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now we're on B and G. I don't know what to say. I mean, there's got to be some hidden message or hidden story behind this. But anyway.
There you go. Something for you to look into in your spare time. I know you have a lot of it. All right. Next up is push button, which is security type U. So again, one of world's greatest mysteries. Why that one? But whatever. So with the security type, you can secure users from using or viewing push button, link, or image controls. So you are able to maybe secure a user using a control, but still allow them to view it. Or maybe you want to prevent a user from both using and viewing a control. You can use secure push buttons, links, and images on both embedded and reusable subforms. I don't even recall how much of this we have in place. I will do a quick check and see what we have out there.
I'm sure this is your PY environment that performs so well.
Exactly. It seems like it's not responding at the moment. Oh, invalid application state. That's very helpful, said no one ever. Ah, there we go. We do actually have a lot of this, a lot more rows of this in place than I anticipated. It's not something I've had to set up for any roles recently. How's that? So it's been in play here for quite some time.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, this type of security is another way of tailoring the system to enforce your business processes and your segregation of duties without having to actually go into the design of the application to do it at that level, right? To hide buttons and show buttons and all that fun stuff. So,
right, exactly. So maybe you want users to be able to view something but not click a submit button. So you can use this to allow for that.
Okay. Makes sense.
All right. Next up, let's talk about text block control and chart control. We actually don't use either of these, but I think text block control is security type K and chart control is security type C. Wow. One that makes sense. This allows you to secure users from using or viewing text block and chart controls. So maybe you want to secure a user from using a chart, but still allowing them to view it, or maybe you want to prevent them from both using or viewing a control or a text block or a chart. So you can do individual segments, basically kind of a control at that level.
I mean, again, just different attributes of our various applications out there that, again, you want to be able to control access to and without having to necessarily customize. So.
Yep.
All right.
The last one is application query security, which you don't actually, I mean, you get to it from the form menu, but it's not a specific security type in the workbench. It's called app query security from the form menu. And what this does is it prevents users from performing searches if they haven't entered search criteria in the form filter or QBE fields. Now, this is a blessing and a curse because sometimes I do want to run a bigger query on something and I can't. But I also understand why, right? So
yeah, I remember when we put this in, actually.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I remember when this came about. It was just one of those habits that people had gotten into where they would just go in and just do wide open finds all over the place. And then in certain instances, watch the system come to a screeching halt, you know? So,
yeah. So this is one where you can trigger an actual error or you can trigger a warning message, which is very handy. We definitely have some of these in place. I'm not going to say we have a ton, but we have quite a few in place.
I would imagine most organizations want to apply this to their anywhere where they have a significant number of records. And you've got to be able to narrow the search before you hit find and prevent those full table scans and massive query results that can cause timeouts and other things in the system that you don't want, right?
Absolutely.
So this is protecting the users against themselves, not necessarily enforcing any business process or practice or segregation of duty. It's just like, I'm sorry to say it, but don't be dumb.
It's also giving your CNC people a break, right?
I got a feel
for them where all of a sudden they're getting some sort of alert or notification that somebody's ran a really big query.
Absolutely.
And we're slowing the system down, right? So I'm saying it's like to keep my CNC sanity and keep them working on stuff that's really relative. How's that?
All right. There you go. So I'm sure this came out of some tech sig request way back in the day, and CNCs were pulling their hair out. And of course, managers that are working with those CNCs are like, man, you know, I need you to focus on this priority rather than that priority. And they're just getting interrupted throughout the day. And we all know how that works. Like, you start out the day with great intentions, you got your top three list or top five list, and you're mid-afternoon, you're still wondering if you're ever going to get to the first thing on your list because you just got unexpected interruptions all day long. And it's all from that one user that keeps on going in the P4210 and going, find, you know, right? I mean, come on.
Oh, so true. Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah. No, that never happens. My days always go as planned and I never have issues like that.
Oh, you're special.
I know, aren't we?
All right. So was that the last of them or are there some like miscellaneous ones out there or what?
We have a couple miscellaneous ones that I thought we wanted to highlight. One was kind of on read-write reports. So you have the ability as an administrator, if you have those privileges, to prevent specific users or roles from running reports that can update tables. So read-write reports, right? So you can assign users to a user profile called no update report creation user, NUR, another acronym that we...
Oh, probably, we missed this one.
Missed this one. Yeah. So that'll restrict users to running only read-only reports. So when a NUR runs a NUR, a no update report creation user runs a report, they'll be prevented from...
That would be a Nuru. Are you a Nuru?
A new route. There we go. It prevents them from making table input output calls to the databases, which can affect business data. So very handy thing to have. I could see how you may want to restrict users from running anything that could update, right? Maybe there's a certain group of them that you really only want to have the ability to read.
Well, this reminds me, though, I mean, we talked a while back about how do you identify reports that actually update?
Yes.
So how is it that our system is able to distinguish between read-only reports and update reports in order to properly enforce this particular security? If we can do this, then we can surely provide that visibility back to our customer community, could we not?
I would think so. I actually had that same question when I read through this. I'm like, wait a minute. If you can tell me that it's a read-write report, where can I find that so that I know, so that from my perspective, right, with SOX coming into play, I want to make sure that I'm granting somebody doesn't update data. How do I know? What's the easiest way other than, especially if it's a new report that's new to me as a new person, how am I going to know that this updates?
Right. Data? I mean, if you're exploring an area of the product that you aren't familiar with, so in your case, mm-hmm. we'll just say you're going over to manufacturing and you're running reports, so you don't know which ones are which because you're not familiar with them. So this is another reason, you know, my team hates me because we have these conversations and then I ask simple questions like, well, why can't we solve that enhancement that says, tell me which reports update and which reports don't? You got security around it. And then they tell me to quit the podcast thing and stop talking to you. But that's okay.
I guess I can't blame them.
I can see Clayton already, like Clayton Seeley already rolling his eyes and like, no, stop. You know? I've probably said at least four things wrong, in this entire episode. And my team is right now running to mitigate all problems that I'm causing. But anyway, all right. So cool. I think we have a follow-up item there. Sweet. I like it.
Yeah, I like all it. Right. And the last one is external calls with published business services. This one, for example, let's go with Report Design Aid. So that resides on your cross-application development tools menu, GH902. So that's a standalone application. But you can also call this application externally using rda.exe. So you might want to apply security to prevent those calls.
Okay. I mean, you can see how things evolve and why we would want to provide certain controls over the system. So
absolutely.
And then of course, you know, we're not touching on UDOs today, but that'll be an episode in and of itself, I assume.
I think it could be.
All right. Well, we do not end any of our episodes without some sort of Midwesternism. I cannot wait to hear what you have this time around.
Okay, if I recall correctly, I actually may have sent this Midwesternism to you through something I saw on Instagram.
And
it was a term that I often use to kind of describe how I sleep, because I'm a restless sleeper. I move around a lot. My sister once accused me of being this way. And what she called it was a crappie flop all night long. So...
Okay.
A crappie is a fish, first of all, for those that aren't aware.
Yeah, this is not your diving technique.
No.
This might be your diving technique into bed, where you
it
just
could be.
Flop
in.
Into bed. This is not something for your polar plunge. Nope.
No, don't try this in a polar. That's more like a belly flop, and that's and not
this
great.
This is... crappie, so it's crappie. It's not crappy flap, which gets us all sorts of other images that we don't need right now. Sorry.
Wow, I did not check that. Okay. I only looked for crappie flap.
I just I'm like, this is somebody's dance move. You just rather, you remember in Animal House and John Belushi gets on the floor and he says sizzle and they bacon, right? I could just see this as the Midwestern version of that, you know, that the another dance move rather than the worm. It's the crappy flop. And you just imitate a fish flopping on the bottom of your boat. Oh my gosh. And that's how you sleep. That's a great image for everybody out there.
Fair point.
Wow.
I do. I flop around a lot. It's just the way I am. I've always been a restless sleeper, even as a baby. Mom attests to it. And so, yeah.
Okay, then. All right.
Yeah.
With that.
You got nothing. I love it.
I got nothing.
We got Paul speechless for a moment.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So send your crappy flap. Crappy flop.
Floppy, not crappy.
I know. Send your crappy flop stories to the JDE Connection at questoraclecommunity.org. Or ideas for future episodes, questions, feedback, whatever. But if you have a crappy flop story, we would love to hear it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, until next time, let's keep learning, sharing, and most importantly, laughing together. Toodles.
See ya. Thank you for tuning in for today's episode of the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production. Show notes and links can be found at questoraclecommunity.org/JDE Connection.
To learn more about what's happening in the Quest JD Edwards community, visit our website at questoraclecommunity.org/JD Edwards.